Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Red Light Podcast, the Redux. I'm your host, Gina Savage. I want to welcome WROM radio listeners in Detroit, internet users worldwide, subscribers, and our guest today. It's a long list of credits. You're going to have to bear with me. It's long.
Really?
It's so long. I'm just going to do it.
It's so long. I heard that last night.
Bwah-ha! Bwah-ha! Yeah, see? See? You're in
actually,
for a treat.
I do want to hear this.
All right, let me just, okay.
What I've done.
All right. He's a comic, actor, writer, producer. He's a producer. He produces things.
Yeah, that's right.
He's a producer. He's a producer.
He's
a. You're a rhythmist. Is that a rhythm?
Professional rhythmist, yeah, because.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, all right. He plays the drums, for those of you that don't know the rhythmist. It's the grapes. You've been on Comics Unleashed, The View, Letterman, Celebrity Apprentice,
yeah.
Nick at Night, Spin City, Tough Crowd, NBC, MTV, Occident, HBO, VH1, Comedy Central. I mean, it goes on and on. Access TV, we're in Chris Rock's Top 5.
Right.
Coyote Ugly, the cult classic,
yes.
That you don't really like to talk about. No. You're in some stuff, really good stuff coming up we're not going to talk about.
Right.
We're not allowed to talk about it. We're under confidentiality.
Limited chat. We can
so ladies
about.
And gentlemen... Wally Collins.
Hello.
Yay.
Yeah, I know. You know what? When you do these things, it's
yes.
Like you get and then you get the whole intro and then you say my name and it's like just a few of us in this room. You gotta hear that applause. It sounds so weird if you don't hear applause.
You gotta do that.
Yeah.
It's like some bastard version of a Howard Stern show.
You need
I need somebody with a cowbell or
yeah,
some
exactly.
Shit.
So you need that canned like applause
yeah.
Whatever
yeah.
Just to sound
hey.
Like okay.
Yeah, we don't have that. This is like so grassroots here.
It was, by the way, you look incredible. You look so nice. Ladies and gentlemen, you can't see this woman, but you look really great. You're wearing like this sleeveless, form-fitting top. What do you call that kind of a top? Like the way it's cut.
It's like a peplum kind of a...
See, I would
like,
never...
I guess.
I would never call it a peplum.
It's got that little thing that sort
it kind
of covers your little...
Out.
Flares out to cover your tummy a little bit.
But I mean, it's fitting you rather nicely.
Thank you.
I love the lipstick that you're wearing. What color is that lipstick you're wearing?
That's called pink.
No, that's not
like
pink.
It's like a vibrant, I don't know what the, it was a gift. I get, everything I'm wearing is actually a gift from someone else.
All right.
I'm like secondhand Rose.
All right. But I love the hair, the hair is covering her eye, like covering her right eye. Kind of very, very, very Jessica Rabbit there.
Oh, gonna. Thank you.
Yeah, and then you got the voice.
And then there's that.
Yeah, and then you got the, that's, all right, I'm done. All right.
Hi, Wally. Welcome to the Red Room of the Red Light Podcast Redux.
Oh, my God.
I like to say podcast.
Oh, goodness.
Are you here for my podcast?
That's what I'm here for? Okay.
Dumbass.
Yes.
All right. Oh, you were also in, what did you do? The Big Idea with Donnie Deutsch?
Oh, Donnie Deutsch, yeah, yeah.
I used to like that show.
Oh, I love that show, yeah.
Of all the things I'm going to ask you, what did you do for that? Like, just what was that
about? We talked
about
my company, you never know.
Oh, okay. Because I want to talk about, perfect. Because I do want to talk about that.
Okay.
All right, so let's talk about the humble beginnings. Were they humble? Not so much.
Well, I guess.
Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Parents?
Two of them. Mother, father. Not necessarily in that order.
All right. And you and they were supportive. In fact, I was reading a little bit. And
researched me, good.
You were going to be an architect.
Yeah, well, I was designing buildings.
Oh, that's right. You were. We talked about this a million times, actually, and then everybody thought you were funny your whole life, kind of, right?
Well, yeah, everyone thought I was funny, but it wasn't a thing. Like they pushed me to do comedy. I just had a conversation with my mother about being an actor, and then she said, "Why don't you try stand up comedy, then parlay that into an acting career?" So.
Or did she say, well, try it. You never know.
Yeah, right, exactly. Oh, I see a little lead up into that. She did. She said three words, you never know.
Okay.
And I was like, okay. And I gave her an obstacle. I said, you know, I don't know where to start. And she says, you know what? You know, people love hanging around with you, whatever. You got a sense of humor. Try stand-up comedy. And like, because being on the stage and that kind of thing, you know. And then put that into a, see if you can put that into acting, whatever. And I was like, I'll try it. You never know, so.
You never know. So here, were you a fairly successful architect? Because everything you seem to do turns to gold. Like,
actually,
you excelled in everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you're drumming, right?
Yeah,
you
I'm a musician,
toured
yeah.
with that you know.
The gospel choir. Yeah. I did a tour. I was actually the.
What kind of nerd were you? Wally?
Well, I was. I should show you a picture of me when I like actually at my apex of nerdism.
Really?
I have a photo of me. I'll show you. And that you'll.
Did
bust
you like
out.
School?
Oh my god! I loved school.
I couldn't
understand why people were skipping.
Right?
Like, how do you skip school? But also too, I was in a pretty hot clique too. I was in a pretty cool clique.
Oh, okay.
So the clique I was in. It's kind of crazy because some of them were jocks. Actually, all of them were jocks. They played on the basketball team, on the football team. I was into music. I played basketball a little bit, but they had a sense of humor. They were very funny. And we all dressed really nicely. And so we're called the Children of Do. So
wait, what were you called?
The Children of Do. D-O.
The Children of Do.
That's what we do.
That's what you do.
Because we're doers. We're children of Do. So we would talk to you like, yo, Do, what's up, Do? That kind of thing.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah. And so... yeah, we had our own table at the, you know, in the lunchroom.
Oh, clicky.
Oh, we're very clicky. But what I loved about those guys is that they're very, very quick-witted. And we could crack on one another.
Sure.
You know, we could hang or whatever. And but they are all successful. All my friends are successful.
Are you, and you're still close with them? Some of the Children of Do?
Yeah, Children of Do, yeah.
Is there a book about the Children of Do?
I should start. Yeah, I'm close with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's pretty amazing that we stay tight. And but we all, and see, the school I went to a college preparatory high school. And so there weren't many like black kids in, you know. In this
what school was that?
It was called Classical High School in Springfield, Massachusetts. Okay. It's gone now. But but it was really cool because there was four high schools in Springfield. There was a technical high school. There was a business school called Commerce. Then there was a trade school. And then there was a college preparatory school. And like you decide like in junior high mm-hmm. or middle school, which one you want to go to. And I went to classical because my dad went to classical, you know, and his brother went to classical. So I was trying to keep the whatever.
Right.
And I just hooked up with these guys, and it was just like really inspiring because it was one of those things that we challenged each other with academics. We challenged each other like with anything that we did, you know, kind of like, you know, I got an A and it's what you get, that kind of thing.
Oh,
you know?
That's the way it should, like a healthy competition.
Children of Do, right. And so, and we always, you know, we dress fly. We always had this, so to speak, air about us that, you know what, we are the best at what we do. So
yeah, I will say that as an adult, the dressing fly part has translated.
Yeah,
I know, impeccable, like unbelievable.
Thank you. Wow.
Yeah, like I always remark on how you dress. This is like he looks sensational when he does. Like this, he looks sensational when he does comedy. This is like why is he doing comedy? What is he like every night? Cover of GQ is what's happening with Wally Collins.
That's part of the upbringing. It's like, you know, if I'm going to be a headline comedian, dress like a headline comedian. Even if I'm not going on last, if I'm the middle comic, I'm going to be a headline comedian.
All right, let's talk about, you know, because a lot of comics, aspiring comics, listen to the show and people that aspire to, like, live life and I hope achieve some shit listen to the show. I mean, like, what I'm trying to do, I hope.
Right.
But, what about that work ethic? I mean, that came naturally to you. It doesn't come off into people, but how did it translate into when you, I know, I've seen, Jim is showing me a picture of Wally.
Oh.
I've never seen how amazing he looks. But how did that translate into, you know, how you attacked your comedy career? How did it start officially?
You know, I really believe it starts in your upbringing. My dad's military. And my parents were definitely like, you know, see, okay, I got to go back a little further. It was a thing of like being black, you know, you kind of had to, you're going out to, so speak, the white world. So you had to present yourself that.
I hate the white world.
Well, you know what? Welcome to it.
Okay. Continue.
You have to be like, you know, three times as good to, you know, to get your foot in the door, you know, and I always was raised that way, you know.
Right.
my parents believed that too. My mother and my father, I mean, I can go on my mother and my father, but they did some incredible things, you know. And so it was just ingrained in all of my two older sisters
mm-hmm.
and us to, you know, be top notch. At least present yourself when you walk into that door, who is this,
they to succeed beyond mm-hmm. you, it'd be work that much harder to be,
yeah,
I understand
that it's going to be a tougher road, basically.
Okay.
You know, but embellish it, take it on, let's do this kind of thing.
Okay. And how did that work with respect to stand-up? Because
everything
Everything.
I mean,
how did you, but okay, like from like start of, when you first like literally hit the stage, how did you, I mean, did you approach it from a business mindset from the, or did you just kind of roll with it?
Yeah, that's what it was. It was total, you never know. It was okay. One of those things where I, when I was in college, I would write down, just out of habit, just write down thoughts, you know what I mean? Like one liners, whatever. And I said, well, I'll use these thoughts, mm-hmm. to do on stage, you know, as like a stand up thing, whatever. And this is the ego that I had. So they told me to prepare 5 minutes. I prepared 10 minutes because I knew I was going to get an encore. So, that's, I knew how good I was.
Right.
And I did that 10 minutes in 3 minutes. So I had 2 minutes of like people, you can hear people clearing their throat. You can hear the ice tinkle, you know, crumbling. And so, but I walked up the stage when I was done with my 5 minutes. I walked up the stage and I saw my car through the window and I was making a beeline to the car. And the manager, the guy who books the show, so he stopped me. He says, where are you going? And I said, well, I tried it. It didn't work. He goes, no, you have great stage presence. You got the gift. Basically, that's what he said. He put $5 in my hand and said, see you next week. And so, and I was like, okay, I got it. This is it.
And that was, and that's how it took off.
That's how it started.
Okay.
And then I really didn't, so he'll explain to me that, you know, you have to learn how to write. You know, that's like a learned skill, mm-hmm. you know? And I always thought that if you're getting a laugh, when you're on stage and you get a laugh, you're a comedian. Doesn't make a difference what you're saying. You're getting a laugh.
Right.
You know? So believe it or not, I was one of the bluest comedians, dirtiest.
I can't even believe it because you're not at all now.
Right. And I thought that's what comedy was. It had to be that way.
Right.
You know? And some of the most racist and most like, oh my God. Oh. But people were laughing. You know what I mean? And self-deprecating. Oh my God. So one
you
day,
were self-deprecating.
Oh my God! Some of the jokes that I said were so bad, but in my mind, I understood comedy was that I said something, they laughed.
And
that was it.
I'm okay,
comedian. You know that's what comedy is.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I grew up in a very Christian home. So it was on a Wednesday. Never forget this. About to go do a set, and my dad's like, my mother and father are home, and they said, "Show us what you do." Right? And I'm like, nah, you don't want to see my stuff, right? You know, I was trying to slip out, you know. And my father's a pretty intimidating guy, and he's like, we want to see. So my mother and father sat in the living room on the couch. I'm remembering this like it was yesterday. And I said, okay, Dad, you have to introduce me. I was coming from the dining room. And he's like, ladies and gentlemen, Wally Collins, blah, 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 right? I get out there, and I'm throwing out, like, F-bombs and da-da. Oh, my God. Right. But I'm giving 110% like I'm doing the show, you know, and my father stops me. I'm like, no, wait, let me get to my closer. And he's like, no. He goes, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm doing comedy, you know, and he goes, what? But that's, you're just saying things. You're not saying anything, you know.
Wow.
So we had this argument basically about I'm up there doing it. But he's playing to me like, you know, how are you representing yourself?
Interesting. You know? Was he wasn't mad at you though? Or was he?
No, he wasn't mad.
He was more like, what are you doing?
Right. Yeah. He wasn't mad. Confused.
yeah.
Yes. He could see that I was lost myself. You know right. what I mean? Because I was.
So he's critiquing in a real way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he said to me, you know, he gave and I hate to say it, but he gave Cosby as an example. You know, I know.
Yeah, it's okay.
And yeah, thank you.
And it's a good example.
In retrospect,
yeah,
you know.
Okay, yeah.
He goes, he said to us, said to me, he goes, imagine your mother and father in the audience saying, that's our son up there. And that changed everything. And I was like, oh, man, I can't say this stuff.
Right.
So, and then drive to this comedy club, I was like, well, yeah, that is going to be kind of hard to try, mm-hmm. you know. And so that's where I started. I started writing, you know, clean jokes or just basically, and it was like a fun challenge for me too. So it was like, okay, any premise that I have, I want to do in a clean way. So if it has something to do with sex or whatever, I want to find a more clever way to get my point across.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what that certainly is key advice for anyone who wants to get on TV, that you have to have a clean set regardless.
Well,
unless you're doing cable.
I teach.
Course.
Well, even so, I right. teach and I tell my students, write clean and use cursing as, you know, as seasoning. You know, because Pryor did the same thing. Pryor could do TV. You know, he would did TV and it'd be hilarious.
Right.
And then we did a club. He'll do the same joke, But, you know, he'll throw the curse words in. But, the, you know, the nugget of it, the nucleus of it is still there. That premise is still there.
Yes.
So a lot of these comics, you know, they, and I understand that when they get that laugh and they're hearing, they're laughing because they're hearing, you know, on the F-bomb or whatever, they're not really understanding that that's really not the joke. People are laughing, so to speak, you know, because they're uncomfortable, really.
Right.
You know? So there you go.
All right. So, you know, who was your first manager? Do I know your first manager? Well, I do know.
Yes, you do.
Now, yeah. All right. You can touch lightly. can you touch lightly on Barry Katz? Can you tread lightly?
Yeah, I can.
Okay. I mean, you guys were friends?
Yeah, we were roommates for 3 years.
Barry Katz, he does the industry standard podcast now.
Right.
Well-known manager for those right. in the biz.
For everybody. Yeah. All of us. Yeah. Louis, Dave, yeah. Chappelle. Mm-hmm. It goes on and on and on.
Yeah. I worked for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jay Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Wanda. On the side, so it goes on and on and on.
And everyone, no, everyone fired him. No, I'm just gonna, love you, Barry.
Barry, yeah,
love you.
Barry had an interesting way of doing business.
Hey, man.
Yeah, hey, man. But I can't say anything bad about him because he helped me out when I was in like really tough situation. And
how did you guys meet?
I finally had an act, like a 20-minute act. In Springfield, Massachusetts, where I grew up. And my friend named Larry Sullivan, a comic from Massachusetts, he goes, you got to meet Barry. So he took me to Boston, and we went to a place called Played Against Sam's in Boston. And Barry was there. And I got up there, did my stand-up, and Barry's like, yeah, okay, I can see what's going on. So he booked me at a lot of clubs, and then we talked about managing. And Barry hooked up the deal with Comedy Central, believe it or not. So
that was the first big...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really can't say anything. I mean, the way that we broke up or whatever was a little, but I can't really say that guy's a jerk because he's done some things for me in my career, you know, so.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think everybody has everybody has a Barry story, and you can be like, how did that happen? How did that evolve to be this thing that just happened? And it's interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah.
How you get sort of manipulated a little, but you can't say anything bad.
No, you can't. Because you kind of
love you, Barry.
Because you are kind of going in there with your eyes open.
You
so
are
to speak,
exactly.
So.
You know, and everybody makes their choices. Right. You know, so so you really have built a career. You know, for yourself. I mean, a lot of this is just your. I mean, people see you that you get one gig after the next. How did the Letterman thing? You know,
I got a phone call from. Well, this is when Lucian Hole was my manager, believe it or not.
I did not know that.
Lucian, I was his very first client. He came to me and said, I want to manage you. So Lucian, well, you want to tell people Lucian
Hole? Well, Lucian Hole, and we've talked about him on the podcast before, but he was he wasn't the owner of the strip, but he was the, like...
curator, really.
Like the main G, like I would not even the G, like he was just a talent booker and the main force behind it. And I'm sure that somebody would call it a different name, but he was there for many years.
Yeah.
He was known for, you know,
being
his
blunt.
Tough, being blunt and his tough policies on, you know, booking his talent. Mm-hmm. He had X amount of white guys, X amount of black guys, X amount of whatever. There was reasons for his thought process.
Yeah, his shows were diverse. He tried to make them as diverse as possible. We had like long conversations, and some people may not like it or whatever. You know, they're not gonna like anything he does, but he tried to be. He was like one of the last people I saw that looked at comedy as an art, and he wanted to give the audience something that someone in the audience can relate to. They may not relate to this white dude, but this Latin woman that comes up there gets up there, or this black woman gets up there, or a black man, or you know, I think a Phil Knee, Asian dude, whatever. They can relate. So he tries to be as diverse as he possibly could, so to speak. But there are a lot of white Jewish dudes. In fact, he said it to some white dudes. He goes, "I have enough white guys."
Yeah, I know for a fact. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like people can't complain. Like you know, he only puts books white people. I'm like no, I've seen it when he said to him, I got enough white guys, so you know, I'm sorry, I have enough white cards.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that was the voice.
Yeah. Hello, yeah. Gina. I love you today. You're looking very lovely as you,
thank you.
Usually do.
Thank you. Thank you. So he got, but the Letterman thing.
Yeah. So what happened, I got a call, he called me and said that Dave Attell was supposed to do a warm-up for Jon Stewart's first talk show on with Paramount. With, Howard Feller was his, like, Ed McMahon. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so they needed a warm-up guy. I'm like, what's warm-up? He goes, well, just get up there and kind of, like, do comedy for the audience. And then I'm like, all right. So I was doing it for the week. And so on Friday, Letterman was his guest. And so I did it on Friday. And on that Monday, I had a call from CBS asking to do warm-up for his show. So I said, all right. But I said, listen, I'm going to do the show, but I don't want to be just that guy, you know, that you don't see. I want to be in the sketches and stuff like that. They said, okay, cool. Never got any sketches. I said, but I definitely want to do stand-up on the show. They said, mm-hmm. Okay, we definitely could do stand-up. So I got stand-up on the show.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, yeah. You've been in great positions. You put yourself in great positions.
Yeah.
How does that? We've talked, you know, after shows about being in the right place at the right time. Certain
right.
things spiritually connecting.
Yeah, man.
How do you have a positive mindset? I want to talk a little bit about that. Now that partly comes from your upbringing. Part of that is your own investigation.
Right.
You know, you never know.
Right.
But you stay in that. So
yes.
How do you, it's a hard thing for people to, you know, especially comics are depressives in many ways,
right.
You know,
like, right.
I mean, it takes a lot for me to get out of bed. I do it now because I don't spend time thinking
mm-hmm.
like I used to do in the morning, a lot of thinking. And I was, no, right. just get up.
Yeah.
Get up and stop thinking
right.
about it all. How do you, this is integral to who you are. Like these were habits that you had. What do you say to your students? Because you do teach.
Yeah.
What do you say to them about those types of habits?
Well, for me, I wake up every morning. It's a new day. And I get very excited. I'm very excited to see what the day is going to bring me. And yeah, I get very excited. Like, okay, what do you got for me? Because every day something amazing is going to happen,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I'm like, all right, what's going to happen today? You know? And so that gets me out of bed. What I tell my students, when they're doing stand up, you know, when they get on stage, they have to have a passion. It's got to be something that they absolutely hate or absolutely love. That's what you talk about. And that's going to drive you. And they go, well, I don't know. I said, we'll start with pet peeves, things that annoy you. And actually, when you start talking about pet peeves, it'll definitely push you to that something that you really cannot stand or something that you absolutely love. So you got to have passion, but either or something that you're cool with. It's not going to drive you to write something that's going to get that applause break. You have to write about something that you're passionate about either way.
Yeah.
So that's what I tell my students. But getting up in every morning, you know, see what the day brings. And also, that's also an incentive too to see, you know, when you look at the world now, oh, I hate when that happens. Write that down. Oh, I love when that happens. Write that down. So you can go through your whole day like that. And then the next day, like, oh, what else can this day bring?
Yeah, that is some serious practical advice for Stan and anybody, right. Actually. Like, wake up and just write.
Yeah.
It's really great advice.
It's pretty simple.
Let me ask you, because this is interesting to what happened to me yesterday. How was your Easter? I know, what happened Easter Sunday?
Why do you ask me that specifically?
I just want to know.
Oh, I think that's like,
what happened to, I'm pointing at him. What
well,
did you do?
See, here, I don't want to bring the show down, you know?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm like, why are you asking that question?
Well, all right.
All right.
All right.
It wasn't necessarily the most celebratory.
Okay.
My mom passed away last year. And she loves Easter.
Oh.
So me and my sisters were kind of like, I stayed in New York. And we talked about it. And yeah, it was a challenging Easter.
Day.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Well, you know, like you said, every day, you know, brings whatever it brings.
And yeah.
But you communicated about your mom, which is
right.
a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And yesterday, you know, I'm Jewish, so.
Okay.
Easter doesn't mean a whole lot to me. But I woke up and I was
you
like...
You feel a little guilty?
But it's... I don't know. Not even. But interestingly enough, I woke up and I wanted to, you know, stay positive like I've been doing. And I you know, I took care of my spiritual needs. I go to like a meeting or whatever I do and talk about that. And I walked over to the East River and I decided it was a beautiful day. And I felt a very loving presence around me. The sun was brilliant yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
In New York City. And at some point, I after like, you know, looking at how the light on the water and all those things that I'm taking in and loving New York and being very grateful, because with all of the tragedies that are going on in the world, or, craziness, you know, yeah, it's just hard to, you know, keep your sanity, mm-hmm, you know, if you really take it all in.
Right.
And
you're talking about Trump, right?
I'm talking... I am talking about Trump.
I'm sorry.
It's a tragedy.
It's a tragedy.
Trump. I'm talking about Trump.
Trump. That's right.
Trump.
Trump. This is T-S-F-T, right? Drumped. Drumped.
Drumped.
I think it is. Yeah. But go ahead. I'm sorry. You know what?
It's okay.
I took you away from your point.
My point is that, you know, like you said, any given day, you could be, it just brings whatever it brings. But I was leaving the, you know, after I took that all in and, you know, had to go about other things, I saw this little girl, mm-hmm, running in along the promenade of the East River. She was tiny, and she's crying, screaming for her mother.
Right.
So I saw some folks ahead of me, and I asked if they were, you know, if she was their daughter, and she wasn't. She was like literally,
well, by herself.
By herself.
Whoa.
And long story short, police were called, and because she was, you know, running, she thought her mother left. There was a playground nearby, but I don't, you know, the child insisted that her mother left without her.
Wow.
And I didn't, and she was pulling me in a direction which could have been home, could have been crazy 4-year-old. Where are we going?
Yeah, yeah.
So we called the police, and and we reunited her with her mother. And so, like, you know, it was, you know, Easter about mothers, you know, like here was this, you know, bringing that. It's interesting, yeah, how, like, you know, the scales of the thing. And then, of course, the Pakistani.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I just, you know, I know, yeah. I don't care that, the, you know, we take a turn that way, because this is life, you, yeah, know. So yeah, these are the things, you know, I talk about comedy and talk about what's going on. I can't. Balance that all, like, you know, it's just
it,
you cannot not,
right?
But this is the thing, when you if you let that permeate, you don't get up. And like, I can't let that I have to get up, I have to do,
right?
So
right.
I mean, you know, I don't know, with the things that you do, like meditation and things like that, I mean, we were talking about Abraham Hicks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you check out Esther Hicks? Abraham?
Yeah, I have.
All right.
So that it's interesting, right? I don't know how many of the people that listen to this show know who that is, but do you want to explain a little bit about how that... No.
Because it's really tough to... It's one of those conversations that you have a conversation... It's one of those things you have with someone who is in that mindset to come out and say it in such a flat out, like, blah, da da, you know.
No, whatever. I don't mean it like that.
Like a, kind of, you know, like on a, like a preface.
No, hey. No, but.
It's kind of hard to, you know, to, you know, push that or try to explain it.
Let me set the stage. When I bumped into you after a gig, we were sitting in this diner, mm-hmm, and I was talking about.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, how I wanted to, you know, clear my mind of cobwebs all the time.
Right.
And our mutual friend, Kate Rigg, had suggested, Kate is a comic actress who I was like, last week I was like, she went to Juilliard. throwing the Juilliard, that's where all the greats go. So she had mentioned that, you know, I should listen to those.
Esther and
Esther
Hicks? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I did. And so... Again, for maybe just how do you if you could just describe who that is, what she does.
All right, so
that's all. All
right, so it's very, very tricky to explain this, because someone who's not in that realm will not buy it. But this is how it is. It's a woman named Esther Hicks, and she's able to calm her body down in order to receive an entity called Abraham. Now, Abraham is a collection of, what's another word I want to say? Entities?
Entities is good. Yeah, and I think,
it's more than one person.
She's very popular, so.
Yeah. So she's all about law of attraction, mm-hmm. manifestation, being in your vortex and all that. But it's not her talking. It's Abraham talking. And so she has to, so to speak, and I hate saying this. It's such stigmas when you hear trance. But she calms her body down enough to receive this. She becomes like a vessel, so to speak,
right.
to us who are in the conscious mind to ask questions and get answers. And so far, I've been listening to Abraham for, almost 10 years now. And it hasn't failed me yet.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm just saying that I'm in alignment with the thought process.
Perfect.
And that it's really, look, everybody's got their own thing.
And also I want to say, too, it's not about religion. It's not
right,
about,
that's what I mean.
Yeah, I want to definitely say that because people are like, oh, he's one of those freaks. No, it's not about, that's what I love. It's not about, God, believing in heaven, in hell and all that.
Right.
Because Abraham explains it, talks about Jesus, talks about Buddha and all that. But what it is that, and it's actually, let me go a little further. I was skeptical, too. And I started to... as a hobby, started to learn about physics and quantum physics.
Yes, that's what we were talking about.
Yes, I started studying quantum physics, and it's called the theory of possibilities.
Yes,
and so basically, it's pretty simple when you break it down. All right, so everything is an atom. So atoms make up molecules. Molecules make up everything, right? So there are atoms that we don't see, but we see the result of the atoms. Perfect example, sound. We don't see sound, but we hear it. Wind. We don't see wind, but we see the results of wind. All right? And I'm going to get really, really deep. Love. Yeah. You don't see love, but you see the results of love. So what happens is that everything you do is an atom. So thought waves, everything vibrates. So your thoughts, believe it or not, are atoms and have waves.
Yes.
And so what happens when you're in the same thought, you're in the same wave vibration, you connect with those things, those things come into your life. Just like when people say Murphy's Law, when something bad happens, and because you're thinking in that way. So,
yes.
So it's the same thing when you want something good to happen in your life.
That's it.
And also here's another great example is that when you think about a friend, like beginning of the day and like maybe the afternoon, evening, and he or she calls you like, oh my God, I was just thinking about you. What happens is that you're in the same wavelength and the waves match up, same vibrational match, and they match up. So it's the same thing, anything you want in your life. You have to, for it to work, you have to think about the emotion you'll have when you get it, how you feel. Then that's what's happening is now is that you're becoming in a vibrational match to what you want. So people want to win the lottery, so understand what the lottery mean. It's, what is the emotional feeling behind it? Is a feeling of being relaxed, feeling of no stress. And so those things will come into your life. And so you just have to calm your body down and just breathe and just think about the emotion first. And then it'll happen.
I want a man.
But it's just that simple.
I had to do that. But no,
I saw your face. You guys
knew where that was coming.
Her face was lighting up. She could not wait to put that joke in. Such a comic.
I want a man. No,
But it's just that simple. That, you can't kid yourself because if there's not a man in your life or money in your life or whatever, there's something that's stopping you from getting it.
No, I joke with you and I joke for the listening public, but that's not exactly what I want. You know what I mean?
Right,
I agree. Like it's vibrational. I think that's the thing that holds people back a lot of time is they're again with the thought process, like the negativity, the spinning, the habit, it's the habitual way people think.
Yeah.
Cause if I got up, I used to do this blog called Mornings, like how I felt every morning.
Right.
And it would always start off negative. I woke up, I looked at my phone, I could get, whatever, and it's just, ugh.
It's all choice. It's all choice.
And it is all choice.
Yeah.
Were you a Tony Robbins guy, just out of curiosity?
No.
Was there ever that time?
I didn't, something about Tony Robbins, I wasn't feeling Tony Robbins.
No.
And so, No, nah, I was like, you know, I'll move on, you know, and nope, wasn't Tony Robbins.
What do you do for your physical being?
Oh, man. Yeah, I believe mind, body, spirit. So what I do, first of all, I have to be happy. I always believe, be happy. And so I think good thoughts, always right. When I'm freaking out, whatever, I try to calm myself down. I'll put on, you know, jazz, meditation music, whatever. And not long. I just need a minute to kind of like just calm my body down.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm in pain, I do whatever I can to relieve myself of that pain. I've been going to acupuncture now, and I love this dude.
Really?
Oh, man, I can tell you about that, too.
Okay.
So it's mind, body, spirit. So then my mind, I calm my mind down. My body, I try to put nothing but good things into my body because that's the fuel. And if I have tainted fuel, then my body's not going to act right. So, you know, I don't eat red meat. I don't eat pork. If I eat fish, it's got to be like, it's got to come right out of the water onto the plate, so to speak, you know, which is very, very rare in New York. But
yeah.
But I eat poultry. I need some kind of protein. So I eat poultry, turkey, or duck. But I supplement, you know, proteins with like eat nuts. Things like that. And
you
so
you do have a nice complexion.
Well, thank you. I hydrate. Yeah, I hydrate. I drink a lot of water.
Yeah.
But yeah, so now that's the body. Okay. You know what I mean? And then my spirit is always, I always, you know, feel that feeling of joy. You know, in my book, oh my God, it sounds so cliche, but in my book, I talk about taking inventory. And so to get to that joyful place, I just take inventory of the things that I have. And I start with the most basic, this breath in my lungs, that I can have a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I can start there.
Now, this is You Never Know? The
part of You Never Know, okay, is one of the encouragements is called Take Inventory.
Okay.
And start there, and then you can start getting, so to speak, the material things. You know what I mean? I have shoes, I have clothes, I have food, I have a roof over my head, I have, you know what I mean? And so then I have the ability to make people laugh. I have the ability to make people feel, you know what I mean? So it goes on and on. And then you go a little further with family and friends, you know what I mean? So then you have so much to be joyful about. You know, and so you start there, just start there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes on and on and on and on and on.
You know, that's the thing that, you know, going back to what happened, but going back to terrorism or any of those things, yeah, and just for a second, not to be the Debbie Downer of the conversation, but it's not enough. There's so much. This is the thing. Like, I want to do, like, I've been thinking, I want to do more as a person on the planet to create a more loving, life for not just myself, but it's, you know, and this I'll say, and then, you know, there'll be a customer at my job and I'll be like, you should know this. You should know that there's a 2-drink minimum. And then I, you know, but what I'm saying is, like, it would just be nice to emanate that, like you're saying, throughout all the things that you do, to be that positive. And it's, I mean, if people have been denied, I mean, this, how, I'm just trying to figure out how it could be, how you could reach it on a global level.
It's, well, once, you know, again, it's once again, it's all choice. And people, I can explain it. Some people find, there's a, in the song, Someone That I Used To Know, you know that song? Someone That I Used To Know.
Oh, I used to like that. Yeah, yeah. I used to like that song. I used to like that song.
There's a line in it that's so perfect. You can get addicted to a certain kind of sadness. And what happens is that something that you know and you're familiar with, if it's you're being sad and you're familiar with that, and you're not familiar with or not comfortable with being happy, you'll go back to sadness because you know what to expect. So people choose, it's all choice. You choose to be there. Now, if you don't want to be there, you can definitely make that choice and get out of there. And people say, you know what, it's hard to make that choice, whatever. I tell everybody, all right, so let's say you're standing, you know, under a leaky roof and the water's dropping you on your head. You know, you can make that choice of stand under that leaky drop of water on your head or just move to the side.
Exactly.
It's just that simple. Don't think that way. It's all choice. You don't have to think that way.
Right.
Your life is not miserable. Your life is not, you know, it doesn't suck. You know, there's a story that a king was very, very sad. And he told all his subjects to find out the happiest man in this kingdom and bring him to him. And so subjects went out and they found this homeless man. And he said, he's, I'm happy. And he says, why are you happy? He goes, because I got the shirt. So he goes, well, give me that shirt. put the shirt on. King put the shirt on. The guy was cracking up. He goes, why are you laughing now? Why are you happy now? He goes, because you got my shirt. So
right.
It's choice. It's all choice. It's all choice. So it's just that simple. You just have just choose. I don't want to be here. Just move.
Just
and
move.
Start. You know, it's not a big leap. Just start with the simple things. You know what I mean? You got breath in your lungs, man. You can, you know, you got vision. You got, you know, you can hear things, you know, so it's, you can taste things, you know, you have the ability to change it.
You do. Talk a little bit about how You Never Know started as a company.
Okay. So when my mother told me, you never know, those three words, I kept that as like a mantra to me. You never know, you never know. And with that, that's where I got all the success. I kept saying to myself, well, you know what? You never know. You never know. And so with that success, I realized that I'm happy and I wanted to share that happiness, but I didn't really understand how I could do that. So I thought about a second, well, not a second, a little bit longer than that. And I said, you know, I want to start a company of happiness and keeping people in this state of mind of happiness, living a regretless life. And so I took those three words, you never know, and crunched into one word, you never know. Y apostrophe N E V A N O. You never know.
You never know.
So when I kept that mantra, let the people know that's a mantra, you never know, you never know. And then I said, well, I need a logo also. When people see the logo, they will know that means you never know. And I, once again, I thought about it and I realized it's a door, because when people have a thought, it's just like it's on the other side, it's in the other room. And basically when you make that decision, it means you're going through that door. And so the logo is a partially open door, and it opens out, not in towards you, but pushes out. Mm-hmm. It's just that simple, because as soon as you make that decision, it means you're pushing through that mm-hmm. door to go to another room. So, I said, cool, I got the logo, I got the name. And so then I said, what am I going to do with this company? How am I going to do it? So I started a website, having people encourage other people with You Never Know. So then every Monday I was writing blogs to encourage people, let this be your theme for the week. And then...
are you still doing that, the blogs?
No. Well, to jump ahead, yep. I partnered with the Life Coach. And she designed workshops with the book that I wrote. And I wrote the book called You Never Know, Book of Encouragements. And it hit number 8 on Amazon, by the way, in the happiness category. And so, and
in the happiness category?
Yeah.
Okay.
They have different, like, you know, they have drama and all that stuff. And so, so she was one of my students, actually. And she's a life coach. And she took the classes because she wanted, you know, public speak, blah, blah, blah. And she designed these workshops based on the book,
right,
with these encouragements. And we do workshops and podcasts and, you know, webisodes and things like that. Webinars, I should say. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And people can people can find that on your website.
Yeah, you can go to youneverknow.com, or you can find it. It's on Facebook, Twitter. It's you know,
okay.
Y apostrophe N E V A N O.
Okay.
Y apostrophe N E V A N O.
Now
I'm looking at your face, like,
because I take little notes.
Okay.
And I, you know, based on some of the things we've talked about in the past too.
Okay.
One of them is that you did. Did you have a minor brush with Scientology?
No.
No, well, no, not you.
I have a friend of mine.
Okay. That's.
What you mean? Yes.
Well, don't we all like sort of?
Yeah,
you're like,
I have a friend of mine.
Well, there are some successful Scientologists, but then you're like, there's a part of you that's like, well, what's the deal with that?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. People are successful, you know, with any background. You know, there's Satanists who are successful. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, valid point.
You know, Nazis are
successful. Yeah, highly successful.
So, yeah, so it's once again, it's that state of mind. It's like where, you know, what you're...
Positive Nazis.
Well, no, it's just that vibration. Is that, are you a vibrational match of being successful?
Right.
It's just that simple.
Yeah. It's all those categories of vibration.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Even if you're vibrating in what, you know, one would perceive the wrong area of vibrational.
Oh,
you
man.
Know?
Yeah.
There's been plenty of that.
Sure.
We got to vibrate some really good stuff.
Well, I'm vibrating all the time.
You are vibrating all the time. That's exactly how it sounds, by the way.
Gina's eyes had to roll the back of her head like, oh, memories. Not that vibrating.
Someone that's listening probably is like, did I leave that on?
Yeah, right.
Where's that coming from?
Check the nightstand.
So you have a couple cool things coming up. What can you allude to without giving it away, because this was a really cool thing that you're doing.
Right. All right. Well, I have a film with Stanley Tucci coming out. Should be in spring and summer, called Blue Angel.
That's cool.
Yeah. And the one that you're leaning me towards,
yes,
is Baz Luhrmann. You know Baz Luhrmann?
Baz. I don't know him personally.
All right. Well,
I'd love to know him.
I do.
Exactly. That's where the vibrations took you to Baz.
So Baz Luhrmann, for those who don't know, Baz Luhrmann is the guy who created and, well, not say created, but directed Moulin Rouge, Romeo and Juliet, and The Great Gatsby.
I mean, incredible.
Yeah, incredible
movies. Incredible mind.
Insane, incredible movies, right? And so he had this vision of, which I thought was amazing, why he chose this, was a show to kind of give like a, I'm trying to think of it, like an artistic way of how hip-hop started. Disco kind of dies off and hip-hop starts in the South.
You've said
Bronx.
Too much. Well, no, it's okay.
Yeah, and yes. So the show is called The Get Down.
Okay.
And it's going to start in October on Netflix. And I play a part in it.
And that's all he can say.
Yes.
But if, I mean, I'm so excited for you.
Yeah, thank
I
you.
Remember you weren't allowed to tell me.
Right.
No.
Yeah, right. I was like, Gene, I got something to tell you, but I can't tell you. Yeah,
exactly. But then I guess there was a point where something came out, so then you were allowed to tell
yeah.
me.
So, yeah, the trailer is on YouTube now, so you can watch the trailer for The Get Down.
For the Get Down, which is kind of like, I mean, I'm not giving away our ages, but that's perfect for like our, you know, like from what we remember as kids, you know, growing
yeah.
up, you know,
yeah.
you and I have a lot of similar sensibilities. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like I'm sure you watched Zoom.
Oh, my God.
Come on, Zoom.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious.
You know, so we create. Are you, you're not kidding me about this.
I'm not kidding you.
All right, so Zoom.
Yeah.
All right. Because this, once again, talk about vibration.
Okay.
Vibrational match. All right.
Okay.
So Zoom, I sent in the first Zoom doodle, and I was talking to a friend of mine 2 weeks ago about this, because he's from Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, I still love watching a show called Zoom. I'm like, dude, I know Zoom. And I wanted to be in that show so badly. And,
yeah, you would have been perfect for
yeah,
that show.
And so... So they have a thing called Zoom Doodle. Oh, so it's a thing where I sent in like this little writing thing, like a little picture that you can make, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, I wonder if my Zoom Doodle is on YouTube. My Zoom Doodle is on YouTube.
Is it really?
I swear to
That's
goodness.
That's great, guys. So they can Google your, well, they can go to YouTube and see your Zoom Doodle.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I'll show you.
I want to see it. that they had that crazy language on Zoom.
Yeah, Ubba Dubby.
You do you,
no? Hubby Frabens. No,
yeah, that's all I could say. Hubby yeah. Frabens.
Yeah,
whatever
I mean.
That was. My sister was very good at it. She was very good at it, and yeah, she was always speaking to her friends in that language. I think everything was all about her little sister, me, being stupid all the time. Yeah, and always needing to go to the bathroom.
That's funny.
Yeah. So what are some upcoming gigs? We have about, you know, a few minutes left. Where will you be? Are you, I will just say to the folks, you can see Wally a good deal of the time. You are at Broadway Comedy
yeah, I'm
Club
there a
on the
lot.
On the regular. You're one of our favorites.
Oh.
I mean, without a doubt.
Thanks.
Consistently good.
Thank you.
No, not even good. Great. Oh. No, I just thought about this too.
Yeah.
You do a lot of corporate
yeah.
gigs and yeah. I mean it takes a special
yeah.
Character to be able to, you know, really switch and move within these environments, and the fact that you do them and you do them so well.
Mm-hmm.
There were some interesting ones I think I wrote down. I'm like, let me just take a look at what I wrote down. Verizon, mm-hmm. you did Hilton Hotels, Dan and Yogurt. You've done, was there any corporate?
Those are commercials that I've done.
Okay, they weren't for corporate.
No, those are commercials.
Oh, my bad.
But no, I mean, go ahead. I mean, the commercials, I've done over 30 international commercials.
Yeah, he's all over the place.
But some of the corporate gigs that I do, not really stand up, I host their events. Yeah, it goes on FedEx,
everything.
Subway, yeah.
You have a career that a lot of comics should I mean, of course, you know, everybody looks at you, are a solidly working stand-up actor, comedian, comedian. You know, you're solid
right.
career.
Right.
And if you are working, I mean, really, it's just an amazing achievement.
Thank you.
It really is. To the question of corporate gigs,
yeah.
anyone in particular that strikes you as being like the oddest corporate gig that you ever did, like you couldn't believe where you were or the setup or the situation? Or
oh,
you...
wow. Yeah, there's a few that I couldn't believe I was there. I did one opening for Craig Ferguson for John Hancock, the insurance company.
Right.
They were their top salespeople. And... and so they said, you're going to open for John Hancock. And I said, for John Hancock. Isn't he dead?
Yeah.
For
Ferguson, yes.
For Ferguson. I was like, cool. I go, where? They said, you're doing a chartered cruise in the Baltic Sea. I got paid five figures.
Yeah.
And I did 15 minutes. It was a 9-day cruise. I brought my wife. It was a six-star cruise.
Oh, my.
And I brought my wife, and
you vibrated that.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You vibrated it
because
it.
You know, and then the Obama gig, which was incredible.
What?
Yeah, that was when I hosted a show. Michelle Obama was the keynote speaker, and that went really well. And
when was that?
A few years ago, like okay. maybe 4 years ago. And then,
what'd you wear for that?
What did I wear? I don't remember now.
Probably looked amazing.
Oh, I know what I wore.
Oh, I do. Because
I just came from Hong Kong, so I had a suit made. So I remember.
Oh, you had a suit made for the event. Ladies and gentlemen, Wally Collins.
I do remember. And so that went well. And so they asked, could you host the event for Bush and Obama, George W. Sr. and Obama were in this, basically speaking, in the same place, which is like never, ever happened before. And I was like, yeah, definitely. And but once again, that was all, you know, vibrational match for it, you know. So that was kind of trippy because I had because security was really crazy.
Sure.
And had a special seat, you know, so with my name on it, with the presidential seal, you know. So, but I mean, it goes on and on. But then there are those gigs that were like, or still are, you know, some of these corporate gigs where I grew like, oh my God. I had to do a show. I'm not going to say the name of the company, but it was a pharmaceutical company that does a lot of drugs and for like a lot of disorders. So when they found out, now I was at the gig and I was hosting their general sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And then they found out that night I'm going to be doing stand up during their awards night. So HR had to come. HR came in, six of them.
Right.
Brought me into the ballroom where I was going to be performing and I had to do my act in front of six people.
Oh my God.
And they ripped it. I'm a clean comic.
Yeah.
And they ripped it. No, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. No, you can't do that.
Wow.
So it was like, wow. I went back to my notes and tried to think of every joke I could. Yeah.
Because, oh, my God.
Because I think you're going to upset these kind of people disorder. You're going to upset these people disorder. That kind of thing. So, yeah, some of these gigs are great. And then some of them are like really grueling. I'm on call 24 hours, believe it or not, when I'm hosting corporate gigs. Too, so.
No. Incredible. Incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got to see one in action. I forget which one that I saw you at. A friend. It was some. This was on the east side somewhere. And it was you were, oh, my friend Megan hooked it up. I remember you did it. It was, you were auctioning off like kisses to, it was like they were dating. It was like something to do with like a dating thing.
Oh, on 10th Avenue.
Yeah. Did that for, I remember that.
Yeah.
For her, whatever that was.
Right.
And you were so gracious and so amazing. Wally is just an outstanding comic, actor, writer, producer. You do everything.
Thank you.
People need to, you know, look at the website, go to You Never Know, all that stuff.
Right.
Because you never know. I mean,
you never know.
Again, I want to point out that we did lose someone in the comic community, Gary Shandling.
Oh, man, yeah.
I don't know if you've ever met him. I have not yet.
Him,
did you have a quick little...
Yeah, he said hello. I said hello and he walked away.
So that happened, and I never even had that. I never got that moment.
It was a deep hello, by the way.
Was it?
Yeah.
Did you shake hands?
Yeah, I shook hands.
Okay,
yeah.
So there was that.
Yeah.
He's a funny man. He'll be missed, and you never know what could happen. So try to live each and every day. Look at me. This is like the spiritual power of the words. Live each and every day completely holy. Do the best you can with
completely
it.
Completely holy?
Completely holy. Not holy like God holy, yeah. Holy. I mean, like, holy, live it. Like, live life. W-H-O-L-E. Like, you know, okay. Make the most out of it. Now that you're done listening to this, my bullshit. My live your lives, people. All right. Hey, you know, six listeners at a time. We're going to make this a better world.
There you go. You never know. You never, you know, because that one of that six could be that
could
one.
Could be the one that says, here's a pile of money.
You never know.
We're going to end on that note. Thank you for being here, Mr. Collins.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime. Want to thank the WROM radio listeners, Detroit, internet users worldwide. Subscribers, please subscribe to the Red Light Podcast Redux on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at Red Light NYC. There's also a Facebook page written incorrectly. It's the Red Light Redux Podcast on Facebook. You can follow me, Gina Savage, at Savage in the City Picks on Instagram and Savage in the City on Twitter. Thank you to Jim Verne on sound engineering. And people can follow you on Twitter as well, Wally.
Yep, Wally Collins.
That's simple. All right, thanks. We'll be back next week.
Yay.